diving into the lake, disturbing Kalia.
And then Kalia came out and began to battle with Krishna. So tonight, we'll hear about the continuation and how Krishna chastises Kalia. So tonight we'll go from verses 21 to 40. Although the elder gopis were feeling just as much distress as she and were pouring forth a flood of sorrowful tears, they had to forcibly hold back Krishna's mother, whose consciousness was totally absorbed in her son. Standing like corpses with their eyes fixed upon his face, these gopis each took turns recounting the pastimes of the darling of Braj. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he mentions that in this pastime, the elder gopis, they have come to the shore of the lake. And they are seeing Krishna in the coils of Kalia. So seeing Krishna absorbed in the coils of Kalia and looking helpless, they're being torn apart. So the Bhagavatam is displaying to us the highest levels of prema. Now, what is the definition of prema? What does prema mean? Yeah, the highest levels of prema means we're going into the higher levels, anurag, bhava, mahabhava. These are the highest levels of prema. They cannot be understood by someone who is conditioned in this material world. This is the love of the devotees of Vrindavan, because their consciousness is fixed on Krishna. At the moment, our consciousness is not fixed on Krishna. It is fixed on so many things, and therefore, we don't have feelings towards Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's entire mission is to teach us how to develop attachment to Krishna. Okay? Krishna asakti, which means we have feelings for Krishna. This is the result of practicing Krishna consciousness. You have to develop emotional bhava. Bhava means feeling. This is the goal of sadhana. The goal of sadhana is sadhya, according to Rupa Goswami. Sadhya means perfection. Perfection means bhava bhakti. Bhava bhakti means when one feels attachment towards Krishna. There is feeling. So when they see that Krishna is in this position, they completely, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, they're torn apart. Right? It's the most intense pain for them. Right? Their lives are coming to an end, seeing Krishna in this position. They want to jump into the river, but at the same time, as is being described here, Mother Yashoda wants to jump in, but they're holding Mother Yashoda back, and then they begin to glorify Krishna. So there's a complete juxtaposition that they want to go to Krishna, but at the same time Mother Yashoda is being held back, Balaram is pacifying, and the older gopis are saying it is okay, because he is the he's practically as powerful as Narayan. But their hearts are just being torn like that. So this is what this pastime is about. Why would Krishna put them into such distress? Why is he allowing himself to be it's on an island, it's described, out in the middle of the river. And why is he allowing Kalia to entangle him like this? The acharyas say for one muhurta. Muhurta means 48 minutes. So for 45 minutes, then Krishna is there and Kalia is entangling him. And Krishna is just letting this go on and on and on, simply to increase the attachment of the Brijbasis. So that is the reason why Krishna performs these pastimes. To stimulate the love, or to increase the attachment of even the pure devotees to take them to the highest levels. And for us, hearing it, as sadhakas, some drops are meant to fall into our consciousness. We're meant to develop some feeling towards Krishna. Right? Some feeling is meant to develop. That's the point. If you do all this sadhana for so many years and you're not approaching bhava or developing attachment to Krishna, then what is the point? Why are we doing it all? Otherwise, it's just mechanical. Bahu jamma kariyati shravana kirta. You just go on for lifetimes, just chanting and hearing, but you're not developing the sadhya or the goal. This is the goal. You must become attached to Krishna. We should be feeling the way Mother Yashoda and the Brijbasis are feeling. That's the whole point. That's the example that we're meant to emulate. They're feeling like they're being torn apart. We should also be feeling torn apart. So that should begin to manifest in our consciousness by hearing these pastimes. There's a couple of chairs there. So by hearing these pastimes, this should be the manifestation or the result. Not that we fall asleep. If you're falling asleep while thinking these pastimes, then God help you. So, any points? Okay. Lord Balaram then saw that Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men who had dedicated their very lives to Krishna were beginning to enter the serpent's lake. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Balaram fully knew Lord Krishna's actual power, and therefore he restrained them. So we heard about this last night also. Balaram was restraining the Brijbasis. Balaram is the Adi Guru. The Guru's position is that he pacifies the conditioned souls, pacifies the devotees. So Lord Balaram is pacifying because they're feeling so much intense separation from Krishna at this point in time. So Balaram is going up and down. He's stopping everyone from jumping into the poisonous lake. It says by his words, by physically holding them back. And some people are not even close to him. He's just looking at them from a distance. He's just smiling. He's just giving them a look. It's okay. Krishna can take care of this. So Balaram is pacifying everyone. So the Guru is also like that. Because the conditioned souls, their minds are disturbed. So therefore the Guru, he pacifies. Because he is Balaram's representative. So Lord Balaram is keeping everyone peaceful. The spiritual master also keeps you peaceful so that you can continue in your devotional service to Krishna. The Lord remained for some time within the coils of the serpent, imitating the behavior of an ordinary mortal. But when he understood that the women, children, and other residents of his village Gokul were in acute distress because of their love for him, their only shelter and goal in life, he immediately rose up from the bonds of the Kaliya serpent. His coils tormented by the expanding body of the Lord, Kaliya released him. In great anger, the serpent then raised his hoods high and stood still, breathing heavily. His nostrils appeared like vessels for cooking poison, and the staring eyes in his face like fire brands. Thus the serpent looked at the Lord. So Krishna is beginning to show his prowess, his potency, his power. His strength, virya. Because he's released himself from Kaliya. Very difficult. When someone is very powerful and they have you, they're holding you, very difficult to escape. But Krishna is showing, even though Kaliya is so powerful, Krishna is showing easily that he just escapes out of Kaliya's coils. And then, and we'll see what he does now, he begins to mock him or torment him. And then very soon he just climbs up under his hoods, just easily. So everything is very easy for Krishna. And it's said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that one who remembers Lord Chaitanya, you can say Krishna or Lord Chaitanya, one who remembers Lord Chaitanya, everything becomes easy. And one who forgets Lord Chaitanya or Krishna, everything becomes very difficult. So even the most difficult things become easy, if you remember Krishna, Lord Chaitanya. And even the most easy things become very difficult. We probably all experience this now, devotion ourselves. So for Krishna, everything is very easy. And if you remember Krishna, everything will become very easy for you, if Krishna desires it. Sometimes he may desire your life is not easy. That is his prerogative. But the point is that if you remember Krishna, generally things will just flow. And if you don't remember Krishna, even like, you know, a couple of hours ago I got a phone call and someone was telling me someone else's problems that we know. And I was just thinking, because I don't really want to hear it, to be honest. I was thinking, if this person would remember Krishna, they wouldn't have all these problems. But then this other person wouldn't be disturbed and they wouldn't be ringing me telling me about it. It's because people don't remember Krishna. That's their goal. I'm doing it in my life. I'm remembering Krishna. I'm not ringing up causing everyone else problems. People aren't ringing each other about me. I mean, I hope they're not. This guy's causing me problems. So why? Because we're focusing our life where it should be. We should be doing this. We should be coming together and hearing and chanting about Krishna. You see, devotees who don't do that, their lives are problematic. Devotees who do hear and chant about Krishna, then the problems become minimized. The only problems comes from other people. It's very hard to avoid. I'm getting very close to going and living in a cave somewhere.
Fiji.
Yeah, maybe Fiji. Well, I'm getting close. What's that?
It's all depends on the Lord.
Yeah.
If you want to use your suffering, there's no way you can escape that.
That's true. Okay. Any other points?
What does Kalia represent? Like other demons represent, you know, passion and, you know, laziness, like jackass.
That was last night's class. where were you? Finding Dory.
That was 2 weeks back.
Oh yeah, 2 weeks. Finding Dory. Gotcha. So, any other points? You have to listen to last night's class, or else you can ask someone. Who was at last night's class? But yeah, we discussed Kaliyas. Okay. Again and again, Kaliya licked his lips with his bifurcated tongues as he stared at Krishna with a glance full of terrible poison, poisonous fire. But Krishna playfully circled around him, just as Garuda would play with a snake. In response, Kaliya also moved about looking for an opportunity to bite the Lord. So Krishna is showing his dexterity, his ability. He is the best at everything. So when it comes to fighting with a serpent, the serpent's trying to get him. But wherever the serpent moves, then Krishna just moves around. And then he goes to get him and he's moved back the other way. So it's impossible to catch him, that's the point. Mother Yashoda already found that out. You can't catch him unless he wants to be caught. So because he is the most powerful person, Kali is trying everything in his power, but Krishna, they're on an island at the moment. It seems like, it's not mentioned, but it's mentioned a little bit later. It's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but it sounds like they'd be in the water, but then Krishna could do that in the water as well. But he's actually taking him to an island and they're circling around each other. And Kali is trying to grab him. He can't quite get Krishna. So basically, you can't play games with Krishna. He's too powerful. So, any points? Having severely depleted the serpent's strength with his relentless circling, Sri Krishna, the origin of everything, pushed down Kaliya's raised shoulders and mounted his broad serpentine heads. Thus, Lord Sri Krishna, the original master of all fine arts, began to dance. His lotus feet deeply reddened by the touch of the numerous jewels upon the serpent's heads. So, Jagannath Ram Prabhu.
Sri Hari comes on stage. Shri Krishna, Jagannath Krishna grabbed Kaliya's head with his hand and forced him to bow down. Most people in this world are quite reluctant to bow down to the Supreme Person, the Absolute Lord. In the contaminated state called material consciousness, we conditioned souls become proud of our insignificant position and are thus reluctant to bow our heads before the Lord. Yet, just as Lord Krishna forcibly pushed Kaliya's heads down and thus defeated him, the Supreme Lord's energy in the form of irresistible iron kills all conditioned souls and thus forces them to bow down their arrogant heads. We should therefore give up the artificial position of material life and become faithful servants of the Supreme Lord, enthusiastically bowing down at his lotus feet. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that Lord Krishna's lotus feet became red like copper because of their contact with numerous hard jewels upon the heads of Kaliya. Lord Krishna, with those glowing reddish feet, then began to demonstrate his artistic skill by dancing on the unsteady moving surface of the serpent's foot. This extraordinary demonstration of dancing skill was meant for the pleasure of the young women of Vrindavan, who, at this phase of their relationship with Krishna, were seriously falling in love with him.
So what are the points there? Bhagavatam says in the second canto that if you do not bow your head voluntarily before Krishna, he will force it down, particularly at the time of death. Then if you do not voluntarily during your life offer obeisances to Krishna, Krishna makes you offer obeisances. In time of death, all your pride is taken away. So in Kaliya's position, and he's a demon, and we all also have this demoniac spirit. Sometimes we don't like to bow before Krishna. Even one time when devotee said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, I don't feel like bowing down towards you." And Prabhupada said, "But do it anyway, and then the feeling will come." So sometimes you may not feel like serving God, serving Krishna. But you have to do it anyway. And then the feeling gradually it comes. So Kaliya, he is defiant. So that's how Krishna feels. That's how Krishna deals. If you feel defiant towards Krishna, and Krishna will press you down and make you humble again. That is the position of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. He always makes you come down. So, Krishna at this point, in chapter 15, was the first time that Krishna enters into Pauganda Leela. It was like Pauganda Kaishora age. So, the pastimes of the gopis have manifest. So Krishna is having some exchange with the gopis. So we've heard that the Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, those in Vatsalya Ras, they are there. The Sakas are there. The cowboys, they arrived with him. And now the young gopis have arrived. And Krishna climbs up and they're feeling intense. This is Purva Rag, this pastime. They haven't really even had much to do with Krishna yet. They haven't actually had relationship. There's been no contact at this point between Krishna and the gopis. It's coming up in the next few chapters. But there's no actual direct relationship at this point. So it's called Purva Rag. Purva Rag means fresh relationship. It means the lover and the beloved have not actually met yet, but they've just heard about each other. So they may have seen Krishna and they've heard about him, but they haven't, like, they may not have spoken to him yet. Because they're quite young, he's quite young. So there's a separation. So Purva Rag means they're seeing him almost like it's for the first time. But they love him. They've already given their hearts to him. And they have intense attachment to him. That is naturally awakened within their consciousness. Now they're born with that attachment. It's eternal. Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema. It is always in their consciousness. So now it is manifesting. So they feel they're coming for the first time, they're seeing him for the very first time. And the person who they love, who they want to one day marry, who they cannot physically meet, they're seeing him as if for the first time and he's wrapped up with a big serpent. So then he knows that all the devotees are feeling anxious, so he releases himself, he plays with Kaliya. Now he's jumped up on Kaliya's hoods, and now standing on Kaliya's hood, he begins to dance. And what is one of Krishna's names? It is Nataraj. Just like Lord Chaitanya, he's called Gaura Nataraj, means the Lord of the dancers. Krishna is the Lord, he's the most beautiful of all the dancers. So he begins to dance very beautifully, and then out of the corner of his eyes, he's looking at the gopis, and he's saying to them, through his glance, he's saying, in the not too distant future, we will dance like this. And even in some pastimes, it is mentioned by the Acharyas that the gopis, at one point, Krishna calls them, they jump up on the hoods with him, and they're all dancing together on Kaliya's hoods. That's not mentioned here in the Bhagavatam, but there are mention of that in different pastimes. So Krishna is saying to them that we will dance together. He's giving life to his devotees. And Krishna's not feeling any anxiety. He's just dancing, enjoying himself. And actually it's very pleasurable because the platform on which he dances is moving. Because Kaliya has how many hoods? 1,000 hoods, or it says 100 major hoods and then 1,000 in total. So it's like the hoods are rising and falling, so Krishna is dancing across all the different hoods, moving around them. So that is his expertise and his enjoyment. Any points?
So Prabhupada, you said that the land under the world.
It's an island
yes,
in the river.
Under the water.
It's not under the water. That's a different thing. This is on top of the water.
So Lord Krishna came on the top of the water.
Yeah. It's an island in the middle of the river. Any other points?
In that case, by the mystic powers, he made that land. Under the water.
He made a castle under the water, but that's not where they are now.
Okay. So. Is there any significance to the copper color on his feet? Is it just part of his beauty, or is there more significance from the
jewels? The bottom of Krishna's feet is red-ish. And the gopis love. The gopis have higher stages of love or prema, which is called anurag, and the color of their love, anurag, is red. It is passionate. And in the Bhagavatam it says the gopi say to Krishna, put your feet on our breasts, let us hold your feet to our breasts, which means to their heart. So Krishna's feet are the color of their heart, which is red, which is the feeling of intense love they have when they hold his feet like that. So that is the significance of the reddish color. Any other points?
But is it that, you know, it became copper because it was soft, but because of the dancing on the Kaliya's jewels, it became a bit hard and it looked like copper. Copper is a
metal. Means reddish, that's what it means.
Not that it became hard.
Krishna's feet never become hard. He doesn't get blisters.
Okay.
Seeing the Lord dancing, his servants in the heavenly planets, the Gandharvas, Siddhas, Sages, and Charanas, and wives of the demigods immediately arrived there. With great pleasure, they began accompanying the Lord's dancing by playing drums such as Mridangas, Pranavas, and Arnakas. They also made offerings of songs, flowers, and prayers. Jogi, that's written.
The demigods and other residents of higher planet resistance became aware that Lord Krishna was personally putting on a wonderful demonstration of art of dancing. They immediately came to offer their services. Dancing becomes more enjoyable and beautiful to watch when it is accompanied by expert drum playing, singing and chanting of the praise. The artistic atmosphere was also enhanced by the showering of multitude of flowers upon Lord Shri Krishna, who was blissfully engaged in dancing upon the hoods of Kali Sir.
So what's going on here?
Drama stage, you
know? Festival.
Yeah, wherever Krishna is, it just becomes a Mahotsava. It becomes a great festival, Maha Utsava. So, anyone else would be in total anxiety. Whenever there's a snake around, everyone's in anxiety. Just like if there's a snake in this room, everyone would be in anxiety. Right? Even if we put a snake in a box, but right, left it right in the middle for the whole class, the whole time you'd be like conscientious that there's a sapa, a snake. And snakes have potency, they're shakti. So, like this snake is huge. Anyone else would be in deep. Krishna, for him, is just a festival. There's just flowers dropping on him. He's dancing. He's looking at the gopis. Same time, he's smashing the hoods of the Kaliya serpent, right? And in the commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, it says that he makes his own sounds. You know, when the dancers dance, like the Odissi dances or the Bharatanatyam dances, you know, when they dance, they go tiki ta te, tiki ta te, tiki ta ta, tiki ta ta te, tiki ta te, tiki ta ta. And they do all these, they make all these sounds. So while Krishna's dancing, he's doing that. He's making his own noise. He's dancing around. He goes, tiki ta ti, tiki ta, tiki ta ta. Right? He's just dancing and enjoying himself. And then the demigods, they see he's dancing so beautifully. They say, let us assist him. Let us accompany him. So they bring the drums. They begin to play different things. And then they begin to throw the flower petals. So they're doing all of this just to give Krishna pleasure. And Krishna is just enjoying the whole thing. And he's invoking everyone. Just enjoy it. Enjoy the situation. And there's no fear here. But the Brij Bhakta, they're in total anxiety. But everyone out, the demigods, he's just saying there's no anxiety. Just enjoy it. Enjoy the whole pastime. So for him, it's just a joyful festival. For the Brij Bhakta, it's the most horrific, ghastly scene. So Krishna Chandra Bhagwan, a key.
Jai. So all the song and the flowers, they're invisible to others,
right? No, they could see the flowers coming down. Because he's on top of a snake. Right? If one of your kids is on top of a snake, right, and there's flowers dropping on your kid, you might still be in anxiety. Any other point? Okay.
I have a question.
So yeah.
Is this even more humiliating for Kaliya?
Yeah, of course.
Because there's a whole festival going on as well?
Yeah, of course. How would you feel?
Pretty bad, but I hope we won't do that.
Yeah, just making him feel worse.
That's like really embarrassing.
He's got an attitude problem. When you have an attitude problem, the guru has to make you feel corrected. So Krishna's... Yeah. Welcome to the spiritual world. My dear king, Kaliya had 101 prominent heads, and when one of them would not bow down, Lord Krishna, who inflicts punishment on cruel wrongdoers, would smash that stubborn head by striking it with his feet. Then as Kaliya entered his death throes, he began wheeling his heads around and vomiting ghastly blood from his mouth and nostrils. The serpent thus experienced extreme pain and misery. So, it's better that we become submissive voluntarily, because if you don't become submissive voluntarily, then the Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas will make you submissive by their association. So it's up to you. Just like when I was a kid, my dad used to say, we can do this the easy way, or we can do it the hard way. And when he used to say that, then I knew what was coming. Right? So you can either do it the easy way, or you can do it the hard way. So we're like that with Krishna all the time. Right? We can make this whole thing very easy. We can just surrender to Krishna, serve Krishna, be humble. Or we can be defiant. And if you choose to be defiant, Krishna says, okay, do you want to do it like that? We'll do it like that. And then Krishna will make your life interesting. But if you choose to be submissive, then your life can be very easy in Krishna's service. So the choice is yours. It's how you want to deal. So Kaliya is not getting the point. He starts getting the point very soon. But Krishna will beat you into submission. It says in the commentary by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, says that Krishna makes the devotee submissive by hellish suffering. So each one of us has to go through hellish suffering. And then when we suffer hellishly, then we become submissive to Krishna. So if you haven't suffered hellishly yet, then your time will come. Everyone gets the same treatment. Any points? Which one of them? Exuding poisonous waste from his eyes, Kaliya would occasionally dare to raise up one of his heads, which would breathe heavily with anger. Then the Lord would dance on it and subdue it, forcing it to bow down with his foot. The demigods took each of these exhibitions as an opportunity to worship him, the primeval personality of Godhead, with showers of flowers. My dear King, Parikshit, Lord Krishna's wonderful, powerful dancing trampled and broke all of Kaliya's 1,000 hoods. Then the serpent, profusely vomiting blood from his mouths, finally recognized Sri Krishna to be the eternal personality of Godhead, the supreme master of all moving and non-moving beings, Sri Narayana. Thus, within his mind, Kaliya took shelter of the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Prabhu.
Volume 1, Chapter 16 of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, Srila Prabhupada points out that whereas previously Kaliya was vomiting poison, now his poison was exhausted and he began to vomit blood. Thus, he had been cleansed of the vile contamination within his heart that had manifested as serpent's venom. The words Smritva, remembering, is very significant here. The wives of Kaliya were actually serious devotees of Lord Krishna. According to the Acharya, they had often tried to convince their husband to surrender to him. Finally, finding himself in unbearable agony, Kaliya remembered the wife's advice and took shelter of the Lord. Sri Krishna Chakravarti Thakur explains that Kaliya's arch rival had traditionally been Garuda, the terrier of Vishnu. But now Kaliya realized that he was fighting an opponent who was thousands of times stronger than Garuda, and who therefore could be only the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus Kaliya took shelter of Lord Krishna.
What are the points? Sometimes you should listen to the wife. Yeah, it's true. Sometimes you should listen to the wife. And sometimes you should ignore her. So, just depends on the day. When she's making sense and speaking coherently, you should listen to her. And when she's speaking nonsense and carrying on, then you should ignore her. Any other points?
Could we say that this is one reason that Krishna killed all the demons but not Kaliya, because his wife?
Acharyas haven't commented on that yet, so I don't want to say why. Yeah, it's not commented on. There would be a reason. There's a lot of detail. Madhavananda Prabhu, a few years ago at one of the retreats at Govardhan, he spoke on this pastime. And I can't get the lectures. I've been trying to get them, but I can't get them. But he goes right into the details. And I think it's because there was one demon. Who was the demon then? His son, in the previous life, he was like son of Bali or something. And then Krishna said he would not kill.
Dinuka?
Columbus? Dinuka? Yeah, it's like someone, if you go right back, previous lifetimes, that person was related, and Krishna said, I will not kill. So then maybe that's, I can't remember, there's something like that. But I think with Kaliya, there's something like that. It hasn't been mentioned yet. I think in the Acharyas may mention. I remember Madhavananda Puru goes back into previous lifetimes, and there's something said, I will not, like that. So something like that. So he just kicks him and kicks him and kicks him, that he won't destroy him. Something like that. There is a reason. There's always a reason, but I'm not sure. So many details.
You mentioned about Kaliya's previous life to be a sage who was actually trying to, they were fighting because they couldn't sort of meditate in one particular place. Because of the sagely qualities what he had in the previous life, Krishna probably didn't want to kill.
Could be. I don't want to speculate because, all the reasons could be true, but yeah, there may be a comment that will come up in the next 3 chapters which describes it. But I remember Madhavananda Prabhu, there's some intricacy going right back of that, but I can't remember all the details. So. Anything else?
So he surrenders to Krishna in his mind, and it's mentioned there. So is that significant? Does Krishna? Part of that reason that he stops because he's surrendered to him in his mind?
Yeah.
Or do we wait for the wives?
No, he knows. He knows there's a change. It's like when Krishna's dealing with you, right, or any of us. When Krishna detects a change, he acts differently.
And it's immediate.
It's up to Krishna how he wants to do it, how and when. But when he feels there's a change, then he changes his. I think so. Anything else?
Krishna must have forgiven him because he surrendered as well, and rest of the demon, they did not surrender, and only Indra, Lord Indra, Lord Brahma and Kaliya, they are the only ones who surrendered.
Could be. Some of them had a realization at the end that Krishna was God also. It's not specific. We have to wait for some commentary. But it could be. That could be the answer as well. So, the fact is that he committed aparad. And aparad is mentioned all through the Bhagavatam very continuously. So what are some of the famous pastimes we heard about aparad as we travel through the Bhagavatam? So there's the Daksha Yagya. We went through different things. Sixth canto is the pastime of Vritrasura. So it's so many different times. Aparad is mentioned. It's like a reoccurring theme within the Bhagavatam. You have to be very, very careful about committing offences. Because what happens is that when you commit offences, your heart becomes hardened. And Krishna's mercy stops flowing. It's like you put a dam in the river. So when there's a dam in the river, or like with the bank, so there's some problem with the bank, you commit some offence, then they block the account. So you can't get your assets, you can't get your money. Or the water's flowing and the dam is put. So when you commit offences to devotees, especially, but it means any offence, means holy name, means to the jivas, any living entities, when offence, or to Krishna, to the deity, when you commit offence, especially to the devotees, Krishna stops giving his mercy. And what happens is that when Krishna stops giving his mercy, your heart becomes hard, because the nature of bhakti is softness. Rupa Goswami specifically says, when you're performing bhakti properly, your heart becomes very soft. But when you're not performing bhakti properly, then your heart becomes very hard. And then you treat other people not very appropriately. So it magnifies or increases your offense. you're already committed an offense, and then that causes that, and then it continues. So Kaliya, even though he was a devotee in the previous lives, but then by offense he keeps committing more offense and more offense and more offense, and now he's just getting himself into too much trouble. So because of that, then Krishna has to come and neutralize the offense. So how does the offense become neutralized? When you go through the 10 offenses against the holy name, there's a way to neutralize every offense. Right? And in one sense, the most serious offense, we say in the morning, to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. So that means Vaishnava Aparad, Sadhu Ninda, that is the term, the Sanskrit. So when you are committing an offense towards a devotee, that needs to be neutralized. Now, how do you neutralize your offense? You go and offer obeisances to the devotee. That's why Prabhupada, part of our sadhana in the morning after Mangalati, we say Vaishnava Pranam and we bow down. And Prabhupada said that's because of all the offenses that you may have, not that you may have, but you may not have done any offenses. But if you did commit any offenses knowingly or unknowingly the day before, you neutralize the offenses. Otherwise, your offenses just keep going. That's why it gets you into that. And specifically, if you know that I have offended a particular devotee, you have to go and apologize to the devotee. Just like I was giving class a couple of weeks ago, and I said something to one of the devotees in the class. You know, I made a joke like that. But I could see when I said it, the devotee was a little hurt. So afterwards, I went to the devotee, who's a close friend of mine. I said, I'm sorry, I said something like that. And I said, no problem, no problem. Like that. But I could see. So, you know, if you commit an offense, you have to do something about it. Right? And this devotee is junior to me. So, you know, I could say, well, I'm the senior devotee, I don't need to, you know, apologize. But, you know, the feeling was there. I didn't feel good. I could see the devotee. And I knew it wasn't a big thing. I knew it wasn't like a huge thing. I knew they weren't deeply offended. It wasn't going to destroy our relationship. But still, something could be there. So you have to go to the devotee. You say, you know, please forgive me. Please accept my obeisances. You know, if the offense is more serious and you bow then you call the joy, that neutralizes the offense. So Kaliya needed to, and until we get chastised by Krishna or the devotee or the guru, we don't become humble. So sometimes then Krishna had to push him down and push him down, beat him into submission, chastise him. And finally, when his mood changed, then he neutralized all the offense. Because he was offensive. But then all the offense, it went away. His consciousness changed. He became soft-hearted again. Right? He wasn't going to offend the devotees or Krishna anymore. So symbolically, it means all the poison came out. Now, when the poison stopped, when the poison was all released, it said then he started to vomit blood. That means the poison was finished. So when the poison is out of the heart, right, then you're in the right consciousness, then Krishna forgives you. But as long as there's poison still in the heart, yeah, you go to the devotee, say, please forgive me, offer your obeisances. Devotee says, no problem. But then all the poison is still there, and then you go and offend someone else. Then, you know, until that's removed, then you can't get Krishna's mercy. So when he's consciousness changed, then Krishna said, okay, that's enough. I've kicked you enough. You've got it now. Okay, now go to Fiji. Enjoy yourself. Eat bananas. So nice that. So, any points? Which one? When Kaliya's wives saw how the serpent had become so fatigued with the excessive weight of Lord Krishna, who carries the entire universe in his abdomen, and how Kaliya's umbrella-like hoods had been shattered by the striking of Krishna's heels, they felt great distress. With their clothing, ornaments, and hair scattered in disarray, they then approached the eternal personality of Godhead. So the devotee is para dukha duki. devotee doesn't like to see anyone. Actually, it mentions in the purport, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says they were actually hoping he was going to die because he was a demon, right? And he was so offensive, and he was so callous and hard-hearted. This is what he represents, all these negative traits. They just said, I hope he dies. And that's how we feel as devotees as well. If someone's very offensive, you say, you know, let them die. Like Mr. Nair, you know, he took the land from Prabhupada in Juhu. And then when he died, Prabhupada said, I've been praying for that demon to be killed. Prabhupada was happy. He's dead. Good. That's the best thing for him. Now he can't commit any more offenses. They want him to die. But then they saw, after he'd been kicked by Krishna so many times, they saw his face change, or his faces change. And they saw, oh, he's getting it. He's becoming a devotee. So then they thought, they went to the Lord and they said, no. He's a devotee. Please forgive him. So that's what a devotee is like. You know, a devotee is not sentimental. If someone's a demon, kill them. If someone's not a demon, then protect them. Depends on their consciousness. Any points? Their minds very much disturbed. Those saintly ladies placed their children before them and then bowed down to the Lord of all creatures, laying their bodies flat upon the ground. They desired the liberation of their sinful husband and the shelter of the Supreme Lord, the giver of ultimate shelter, and thus they folded their hands in supplication and approached him. The wives of the Kaliya serpent said, the punishment this offender has been subjected to is certainly just. After all, you have incarnated within this world to curb down envious and cruel persons. You are so impartial that you look equally upon your enemies and your own sons. For when you impose a punishment on a living being, you know it to be for his ultimate benefit. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out in the purport that Krishna is always just. However Krishna deals with you, it is the way you need to be dealt with. How the guru and the devotees deal with you, that is what you need. Sometimes the devotees get on your case. Just like in the last couple of weeks, I've had to chastise or correct some devotees, right? Which none of us like doing. But then I think to myself, I don't like doing it. Actually, I don't even want to get involved. But I see the devotee is doing something wrong or their attitude is not correct. So I say something to them. I say, this is not very good. You're coming late for the Bhagavatam class, for the class all the time. That is not good. Get it through your thick head. Right? So devotees, maybe they don't like to hear that. I don't really care. Right? Get the point. Right? And other things. There's so many other things. So get the point. So Krishna is always just. The devotees are always just, and the guru is always just. So when they correct you, right, if you are in the right state of consciousness, you will see. None of us like to be corrected. Even Prabhupada himself said, he said to his disciples, he said, I know you don't like to be corrected, but still it is my duty. I must do it. No one likes it. We don't like it. The other day, Manigriva Prabhu, because, you know, we live on the farm. Most of the time it's just me and him. And he said something to me. You know, he said, you're like this, and, you know, criticize me. And then I didn't like it, obviously. You know, no one likes it. Hands up, you like being criticized. We don't particularly like it, do we? But he said it to me. He said, you're like this, you're like this, like that. And then I didn't respond. You know, I've made enough progress in devotional service. I didn't say, hey, what about you, and you're like this, and, you know, I didn't do that. You know, I just listened to what he said, but it hurt me. I thought, you know, it's not very nice. But I listened to what he said, and then I walked away, and then I thought about it, and I thought, no, he's right. These are things I need to work on. So it's for my benefit. So when the devotees say something, the devotees are being just. I mean, maybe not every devotee. Sometimes devotees are just speaking out of envy or, you know, but If you keep hearing the same thing again and again and again, year after year after year, it means obviously it's true. And you need to work on that. So there's, when the devotees are correcting us, or the guru is correcting us, or Krishna is indicating things to us, it's for our benefit. So Krishna never treats anyone improperly. So with Kaliya, he's treating him as he needs to be treated. And what's the best thing for him? Kicking him in the head. So that's the best thing. He does it. Just kicks him and kicks him and kicks him like that. And then as soon as he changes, Krishna says, okay, it's all finished. You got the point. Now we can be nice to each other. Right, go to Fiji and have a holiday. So, just let me finish this point. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that suffering relieves us of our demoniac nature. So we have to suffer to overcome our anartas, our false ego, our demoniac nature. So when the guru chastises or a devotee chastises, that relieves you of your demoniac spirit. And the test is whether or not you accept it or not. We don't like it. I know what it feels like. I don't like it. But you have to learn not to react. Right? You're sitting there and you're getting it. You don't particularly like it, but you know, you accept it. You go away. You think about it. You digest it. Right? You introspect. You see, and then you try to change. Right? And that's how we improve as devotees. Any points? What you have done here is actually mercy for us, since the punishment you give to the wicked certainly drives away all their contamination. Indeed, because this conditioned soul, our husband, is so sinful that he has assumed the body of a serpent, your anger toward him is obviously to be understood as your mercy. Did our husband carefully perform austerities in a previous life with his mind free of pride and full of respect for others? Is that why you are pleased with him? Or did he, in some previous existence, carefully execute religious duties with compassion for all living beings? And is that why you, the life of all living beings, are now satisfied with him? So it's being indicated, Prabhupada explains in the purport, that generally, if we're taking up devotional service, it means we've done something in the past. We're not just taking it up now. We didn't just walk into the temple like that. It means you've done it previously, but we were not successful. So now you're starting again from where you left off and you'll leave it, your previous life. Your previous life, you did devotional service, but you could not perfect it. So now you have another chance. And sometimes devotees have to take birth multiple times. Or, if you're intelligent, you can take birth once and you can perfect the whole thing. So try to perfect it. No. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru, said, he expects every one of his disciples to go back to Godhead in this lifetime. So you have to see, am I doing that? Am I going back to Godhead? Any points?
Well, I just had a question. Were his wife's snakes?
Yeah.
Then why did they say he has even taken the body of a snake if they were snakes?
Because he's envious. Snakes are envious. They're depicted as, when you see pictures of them, it's like half snake, half woman. And also these types of creatures can change their form. They can be human or snake, so whatever. I'm not sure what form they would have at this point. But they're snakes. That's
why aren't they pure devotees? Why were they snakes?
You can take birth in any form, but you can be a pure devotee.
Like the bee or the tree?
Anything. Any
form. Pure devotees to be there.
Yeah, that means doesn't matter what your form is, it's what your consciousness is, that's what's important. O Lord, we do not know how the serpent Kaliya has attained this great opportunity of being touched by the dust of your lotus feet. For this end, the goddess of fortune performed austerities for centuries, giving up all other desires and taking austere vows. So generally, you have to do something in your previous life. But it's being pointed out here that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura says this is just causeless mercy. Krishna's just being very kind. Whether he did something previously or not, Krishna is just giving kindness. This is called Kripa Siddha. Sadhana Siddha, Nitya Siddha, and Kripa Siddha. So you can become perfect because you always were perfect. You came from the spiritual world, like Prabhupada, that's Nitya Siddha. Sadhana Siddha means we're doing sadhana, and Kripa Siddha means you just got mercy. It means that Krishna or the pure devotee gave you mercy and then you elevated yourself very quickly to Krishna consciousness. So he's getting very special mercy from Krishna. Those who have attained the dust of your lotus feet never hanker for the kingship of heaven, limitless sovereignty, the position of Brahma or rulership over the earth. They are not interested even in the perfections of yoga or in liberation itself. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura says that when you have the dust of Krishna's feet, you do not desire anything else. So that is the dust which we're... And in this material world, it means the dust of the guru's feet. Because you cannot get the dust of Krishna's feet very easily. So a devotee, he tries to get the dust from the guru's feet, which means serving his instructions. By serving the instructions of the guru, then you attain Krishna. And that's how you transcend this world. Oh Lord. We'll keep going. O Lord, although this Kaliya, the king of the serpents, has taken birth in the mode of ignorance and is controlled by anger, he has achieved that which is difficult for others to achieve. Embodied souls who are full of desires and are thus wandering in the cycle of birth and death can have all benedictions manifested before their eyes simply by receiving the dust of your lotus feet. We offer our obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although present in the hearts of all living beings as the Supersoul, you are all pervasive. Although the original shelter of all created material elements, you exist prior to their creation. And although the cause of everything, you are transcendental to all material cause and effect, being the Supreme Soul. So these are the beginning of the prayers. From this verse till text 48, we hear about the prayers which are offered by the Nagapatnams. So they're basic prayers, which are given by all through the Bhagavatam, establishing Krishna's supreme position. Obeisances unto you, the absolute truth, who are the reservoir of all transcendental consciousness and the potency and the possessor of unlimited energies. Although completely free of material qualities and transformations, you are the prime mover of material nature. Rohini, I'd like to read them.
Those who consider themselves intelligent, intellectual, philosophical or rational should carefully note here that the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the ocean of all knowledge and consciousness. Thus, surrendering onto the Supreme Lord does not entail giving up the method of rationally comprehending reality. Rather, one merges into the ocean of rational logical comprehension. Supreme Lord is the perfection of all sciences, truth and all forms of knowledge, and only envious and trivial minds would deny this obvious fact.
Hmm. So what are the points then?
Lord Krishna is perfect.
Lord Krishna is perfect, very good. So they understand his supreme position.
And actually, when you're connected to someone who is exalted, you can also become exalted. So the Nagapatnis are pure devotees. So because the wife is the pure devotee, then the husband gets the benefit. The Krishna, he will soften. So that's the basic principle. The basic principle is that if you are connected to a very advanced Vaishnava, then Krishna becomes inclined towards you. But if you're not connected to an advanced devotee, then it'll be very difficult for us to attract Krishna. So that is the principle. Because they are pure devotees, then Krishna becomes attracted to Kaliya and if it gives it. Any final points? Yeah.
So they're giving him prayers knowing his personality of Godhead.
Yep.
So are they covered by Yoga Maya like the Vrishabhasis, or are they more like Brahma who sort of know him and they don't belong there?
No, they're more advanced than Brahma. They're not like the Gopis, not on that level, but they're somewhere
so
in between.
So does Yoga Maya cover them?
Maybe to some degree. They're in Vrindavan, so to some degree. Any other points?
I heard that the husband both get the benefit out of the benefit from the husband.
We get nothing from our wives.
You just said that.
We give them 50% of everything we have and we get nothing in return.
Right.
So the wives should be very obedient to us. I hope my wife is listening to this lecture because.
That's all right, but what I am asking, you just said that he got benefit because of...
Because the wives are pure devotees, yeah. So if your wife is a pure devotee, you get benefit.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, of course. So you should send a text to my wife and tell her to be very submissive. And to worship her husband. Huh? You don't live with me, so... Okay, so next Tuesday we'll do an overview of chapters 9 to 16, next Tuesday night. And then the following Tuesday, we'll do the closed book exam. And your open book exams and oral presentations will be due in 2 weeks today. Everything needs to be handed in, nothing late. Like this. What's the date for that?
2 weeks. The exam will be on Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday exams. Because Jagannath Ram hijacked the course. So.
2nd August.
That's two weeks from now. Okay. So 2 weeks from now, 2nd August, that will be the exam. Next Tuesday, we do an overview. And then following week, exam, 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the theatre. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.